I want to start off by telling about Bobby Waginka. Now, Bobby had twin girls. This would have been somewhere in the 50s. And I don't know their names at this point, but it seems that the twins came off of Grandpa Waginka's side of the family. There seemed to have been two boys there, a little of which is a mystery at this point, because I don't know who had them, but I know that the wife of Uncle Steve Waginka, I called him Uncle Steve, he was the caretaker out of St. Joseph's Cemetery, and Uncle Steve was the nephew of my grandfather. His father and my grandpa, Frank Waginka, were brothers. Aunt Clara, her name was Bahalski from home, and her brother Louis, he married a lady named Wajaleski, who was Francis and a very good friend of Mom's, my mother Sophie. In fact, she was in her wedding, and I do have a picture of her as a bridesmaid, and she stood up for Francis. Francis now has had throat surgery, and she doesn't talk, but without the aid of some appliance. And she has a daughter named Esther. Esther Spahalski, and then they had another daughter named Louise. Now that's in Grandma's background, Grandma Waginka. And I've tried to get as much family history. We went to see Aunt Clara, who lived on Pine Road, Clara Waginka. She's an awful sweet lady. I think she's about 87 now, and she does her own canning. She had a bunch of jars there with tomatoes and zucchini and the various vegetables that she's prepared for herself. Now, she had a boy named Louis who does have multiple sclerosis, but he does get around in a wheelchair, and he does some mow the lawn on one of these wagons, and he has a slow debilitation there in his muscle, which is what MS is. And another case in point is Aunt Carrie's daughter Mary Lou. She married to Kenny Krampitz. Well, he now has multiple sclerosis also. I hope I had covered all of the Waginkas, except that I didn't want to say about Bobby, who was that cousin that was always our age that we had something in common with, and he married a young woman from Michigan and lived with her up in Leominster, Massachusetts. But and that's where Loretta and I went right off after World War II was over. We wanted to go visit someone out of town, and so we went to Leominster, which is a sweet little town of about 2,000 or 3,000, and there was a church there called St. Leo's. Well, Loretta and I went just as an adventure. We were single, and we stayed at Bobby's wife's house. He wasn't back from the service yet, and she took us in, and she had been rooming these different people around town. She rented this great big house, and it was on School Street. It's a quaint, very quaint area. They had a common, which was a big patch right in the middle of the town, like a park, and the people would go there on Sunday and sit and so on. And on holidays, the parades would stop there. Well, in Leominster, this girl, and I've forgotten her name now, but she was also a waitress and earning money and then getting Bobby's pension check. And when he came back, she didn't want to be married anymore. So Loretta and I, we left their place. We let them settle their businesses. So we went and got a room a block away at some doctor's, doctor's home where he had been renting rooms. So we lived there a while, and then it was time to either come home or stay, whichever the case may be. And we decided, well, we were going to stay in Massachusetts. We loved it dearly. We were close to Boston, and Worcester was another, the biggest, next biggest town. And we liked going in on shopping trips to Boston. So somebody said, well, go out to Fort Dillon and get a job. And we said, oh, that sounds like a good idea. So we went there, and they hired Loretta in cosmetics. It was a big, great big store, like, and I worked in jewelry. And when the boys came back from overseas, they were getting out little by little, troop by troop. They'd stop there and buy some gifts to take home to their wives or sweethearts or mothers, sisters. And it was such fun because we dressed alike, and one of them would be in my counter, then he'd go across to the other side and say, gee, didn't I just leave you? Because we looked so much alike. And then we stayed there that winter working, but we moved out of Leominster. We came to the fort because they said that there were some barracks that were available now for civilians, and we could live there if we like for a small fee. Well, we picked out a room, and it wasn't very feminine or anything. After all, it was a barrack, so we bought some chintz and curtains and women's things to decorate it with and to make it look comfortable and homey. And at that time, Loretta had met a man named Charlie Johnson, and he was crazy about her. We used to go up to the lake. There's a little lake on the fort, and it's been an afternoon there if we weren't working. It was Wednesdays or Thursdays that we had off. And then we found that they were soon going to close the commissary, and this worried us a little bit. But someone said, well, go on out to the North Shore or to Cape Cod or someplace and get a job as waitresses. Well, we thought that was a good idea, except we couldn't waitress. But we thought we'd wander up there anyway and see if there was anything else available. And we happened to go to the place called New Ocean House. It was a great big sprawling resort right on the ocean. It was gorgeous. This was on the North Shore. You had to go through a place called Swampscott. Lynn out of Boston, then Swampscott. And this was on the way, when you left there, it was a route to go to Nova Scotia, and Beverly and Marblehead and so on. Well, we did get jobs, but not as waitresses, because they were all taken. And we said we couldn't do that anyway. And they said, well, could you be chambermaids? And we said, well, I think we could, and just tell us what to do. So they said, well, all you have to do is knock on these hotel rooms in the morning, the doors, and go in. And if nobody answered, then you went in, made up the bed, and left some clean towels. And we said, oh, we can do that all right. Then we did get the jobs, and we lived in some of the cottages. There were a whole lineup of cottages where the employees lived. And we at that time met this wonderful person called Gladys Larrivee. We used to call her Gladdy. And she was from Revere, Mass. She was about 55 and a very sweet, kind woman who had two children. And she had always been a chambermaid as long as she could remember, either there in Massachusetts or in Florida. She had a friend named Mary, and Mary was so sweet. And they were both very devoted Catholics, and they were looking out after us. Well, then our hours were morning hours for about one or two hours of the morning, and then we could first have lunch in the commissary, and then the afternoon, we had the afternoon off. So we'd usually go on the beach and mingle with the guests, and that was always a lot of fun. We never knew who we were going to meet. But then the evening, we'd have our dinner in their dining room, and then we'd go back up to the rooms and turn back the beds. If nobody answered, that is. If someone was in the room, we just kept on going. And so our tasks were rather easy, except we had to be there. And on Wednesdays, we'd have the day off. So we get on a train and we go down Cape Cod. Oh, it was a beautiful, beautiful ride, because you go past all these old, old homes, which the wood had that smell of the sea, that salt water. It had carried through the air and aged these homes, and the natives up there thought that was just so great, because they like to preserve it that way and to say that they're very, very old. And one Wednesday, we decided, well, what are we going to do with our future? Let's take a plane and go up to New York and go to this remodeling school that we had seen advertised all the time. It's called the Barbizon. And so we got onto this plane. It's the first time ever in our lives. And it took us over New York City at night. And it was the most gorgeous, bejeweled setting we'd ever seen. And then finally we landed at LaGuardia Airport, which was all perfectly strange to us, of course, and rather secluded. At that time of night, there weren't very many people around, but we kept asking questions to how to get to Manhattan and to get to this YW where we had reservation. Well, we had 2-3 different people give us directions, and two of them steered us wrong. Finally, the third one, now we were pretty tired by then, told us the right way to go. And when we got in the city, it was already 2 a.m. And surprising, though, enough, there were people walking around. It just seemed like in New York, there was always somebody on the streets there. And it just felt safe all night long. Well, we went to the Y, and the next morning, we had a good night's sleep. Next morning, we kept our appointment at the Barbizon School of Modeling, and they gave us these little written tests, and then they talked to us and said, oh, you'd be perfect for this modeling school. You're tall, thin. We'd like to register you right now. And we says, well, we want to register right now, but we want to go home and work a little while so we can make a little money, and then we'll come back when we have enough to go through school and feed ourselves. And they said that was just great. So we left there and went back to Boston. And it was coming on winter, November here, and we decided to move to Lowell, Massachusetts. It was a nice little town. We thought we'd stay there a while, because Florence, a friend of ours who we had met earlier, she was there, and we thought we'd have somebody. So we went to Lowell and also got rooms at the YW, and that was very pleasant. She would see Charlie, and we did a lot of visiting in the different historical areas. And then finally, she says, I think we better go home. And Loretta, she was always the leader of the pack. She seemed to have feelings about instincts quicker than I did. So we went home, back to 930 West LaSalle with Mom and Dad. And they were glad to have us home. We'd been gone over a year now. And though we have quite an adventure. We used to go to a place in Boston called The Cave. Well, it was in an alley someplace. I wouldn't know for the life of me how to find it now. But it was an enjoyable night spot where you can dance and have fun. And then we stayed in South Bend, went back to Bendix, because that's where we had worked before we left. And they took us and welcomed us back with open arms. So we worked for them a while again. And in the springtime, Loretta says, I'm ready to go to New York. I'm tired of this job. How about you? And I said, well, I'm tired of it too, but I think I'd like to have a little more money in the coffers, because I just want to be secure. I want to have that feeling that I've got something in the bank. She said, all right, well, I think I'll go on ahead. So we got her packed up, and she took the train from the station here on South Street, the New York Central. And she arrived there. This would have been in about 48. I take that back. 1948, in the springtime, she arrived in New York, and stopped. She was at Grand Central Station, which is around 42nd Street. And no one to meet her, but she went to the school, and they immediately fixed her up with a room in a neighborhood called Kew Garden Hills. That was in Queens. And so she went there, and she met Mrs. J. Her name was J. Zabowski, and she had been an artist, had talent, was a singer in Poland, but and her two daughters were quite talented. Well, she had had Loretta in an upstairs bedroom, and down in the basement, which had been remodeled, was a little apartment where two other models lived that were from the Barbizon School. One was named Joan Gaffney. She was a redhead with beautiful freckles on her face and a very sweet personality. And then there was Beverly Myers, and she was from a small town, Massachusetts. Joan was from Fall River. Beverly was from Manchester. And that's just the way she used to pronounce it, Manchester, New Hampshire. Not Massachusetts, but New Hampshire. She had great possibilities because she was just really gorgeous. And the two of them and Loretta got acquainted, and they'd go back and forth to school together. And then about 2 weeks later, I came to New York, and she met me. And my, she looked great because she'd had this complete makeover. And she had taken one of our brown suits, which we have dozens of pictures of, and put a string of pearls around it, hip-wise and shoulder-wise, and looked just gorgeous. So we settled there in New York. And our course was about, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks. Well, we graduated with honors. And then we were quite sincere, of course. And we made friends as we went along. And then we got signed up with the Harry Conover Modeling Agency. And we thought this was great. We'd check in there about every day. And we thought, well, in the meantime, we'll have to have some sustenance. So we better get some jobs while we wait for this big time to come along. And we went over to Stouffer's, which was right across from Grand Central, right there on 42nd Street. A wonderful place to eat and to work. And they hired us as waitresses. And we wore these uniforms that were gray, and had a little starch apron. And we didn't have to wear anything on our heads, but we had to make sure we were always clean and had comfortable shoes on and so forth. So we worked down on the lower level. And we made very good money in tips. And while we waited for our opportunity, we were sent out to different modeling jobs, runways, fashion shows, and so on. But when our big opportunity came, which was a chance to be the Tony twins, I got a kidney stone. I was awfully sick, so I had to go to the hospital. And Loretta missed out on that just because of my being sick. Well, these two twins who were named Vanderbilt, and I'm sure they didn't need the money. They were very famous in New York at the time. One was named Consuelo, and I don't remember the other one's name, but they were very good-looking blondes. They got the job as Tony twins. So they became quite famous for that. Well, in the meantime, we had joined the church over in Kew Garden Hills with the Catholic Church, and there was a youth group there, which we went to meetings once a week, and just happened that the one who was the leader of that group, his name was Louis Catalano, and he very much liked Loretta, took a shine to her, 100%, and he started to date her. Well, I came along a lot, too, and he didn't mind that at all. He used to take us to dinner quite often to a local restaurant where he knew the people. He knew the people all over Jamaica, because that's where he was from. That's the way they pronounced it. And his mother lived there in Jamaica, too. And she was a very sweet Italian lady, kind of on the short side, and just pleasant as she could be. And she had another son named Emil, and then another one younger than Louis. His name was Arnold, and he was just a young guy, about 15. And then he had two sisters, In fact, Louis had a twin sister named Gloria. She was very pretty. She was getting married before long. Gloria was, she was 21. She met this handsome young guy, and he owned a butcher shop, and so she married him. Well, then Louis and Loretta were talking about an engagement. She wasn't real sure, but because we'd only been there and worked about a year and a half, but it came October of that first, that second year, why our friends, Helen and Ray Zielinski, were having a wedding here in South Bend, and they wanted us as bridesmaids. So we got in the car, and Louis had a big Kaiser Fraser, which was a big, heavy-set car, four-door. And we got in that car coming to South Bend. We were coming across the Pennsylvania Turnpike. We just seemed to have gotten off of it. And Louis fell asleep, and the car turned over. I mean, it turned over, completely over on its side. And although none of us were injured, the three of us were in the car, and we were bumped. We had bumps and bruises, but we had no fractures and no nothing serious. And in those days, of course, we had no seat belts. They just didn't dream of putting anything like that into a car. I guess people weren't driving too recklessly the way they are now. But there we were in the middle of the night, and was scared and shaking, and the people that came helped put the car upright, and we decided right now we're going to a motel and sleep the night away, and never mind this driving while we're tired. So we did that, and we checked the trunk and the beautiful dresses that had been made for us for the wedding. They were intact, so that would have been, well, it probably have been 40 years ago now this week, because this is October the 13th, and all that happened at that time. We came to South Bend. That was the first time my folks met Louis, and they had a nice dinner for us and so on. Then we went to the wedding, and then a day or so, we decided to head back. So we went back to New York, and that following the June before we came home, actually, July before we came home, was when Loretta and Louis got engaged. And then the wedding was like a year later in June the 25th, 1949. And Loretta and Louis got married. Then we, at the time, we were living with Mrs. J, but we had moved to Flushing, New York. And then we had an apartment there with another lady named Florence. And then I decided to move out of there and come into town, into Manhattan. I lived right across from Columbia University and still tried to do some modeling, single modeling, but it wasn't working out so great. I wanted to be with Loretta as much as I could, and I still continued at Stouffer's. But a year later, then Louis Jr. was born, and this was in July the 21st, and little Louis came along. He was such a precious child. Loretta and Louis lived up on the third floor at Grandma's house, Grandma Catalano. On the second floor was Emil and his wife and their daughters, and they were a very nice couple. But I couldn't see Loretta as much and still make a living in Manhattan, so I decided that I would then come home. So I did. I left them quite reluctantly, came back to South Bend, and I had been in the meantime writing to Wally. And I went back to Bendix and got a job again. And it was kind of boring after having lived in New York. However, dating Wally was fun. We went out almost every night. And went to different functions, and he was setting up his practice. Well, his mother and dad had this marvelous little apartment house at 542 North Scott, and while he had set up his office up on the second floor on the right side, it was a cute little office, and he was trying to build his clientele. Well, then we went steady, you might say, for 2.5 years, and then we decided to get married. And we got married. This would have been October the 11th, 1952. And Loretta came in for the wedding. She had a gorgeous velvet dress, and it was kind of a burgundy. And I wore a beautiful ice blue satin dress. I've always worn ice blue satin, so I got that at Macy's.